50 or 120 kids and 50 or 60 parents on a third grade camp out, which is 3 days in a beautiful camp setting, and it's really terrific. And I wish that we could incorporate more of this type thing in our camping so we could get a big grant for it. But come see us. I work at the Lake Butler Elementary School.
Art Latham, I taught at one time in Bard County. I'm in Alachua now. I'm not teaching, working for the university. I'm here with Southeast Indian News Enterprises. So if y'all want to read a story about this, you better feed your head about getting a copy of the Seminole Tribune.
My name is Jim Springfield, and I direct Alachua County's Outdoor Education Center, which we do that every week of the year.
My name is Judy Springfield. I taught art last year at Union County High School, and this year I'm a freelance photographer.
Chuck Daniels, our Sakim and Cultural Arts Director for Northeast Alabama, and a Museum Director for the Creek Indian Museum at Blountstown, Florida, and teach the Title IV elementary, adult, and college level courses in Native American Studies. For the Florida Tribe of Creek Indians.
And he just got over major surgery. We're glad you're here.
I'm Sue Richardson. I work for Tallahassee Junior Museum with Jim. I manage the museum store, but one of the favorite parts of my job is organizing the Native American Festival every September. And this is the fourth year I've done it.
And we, every time I get your literature, we recognize people that you all are bringing in there.
I'm sure. Becky Johnson, Palm Beach County, 14 years, elementary principal of Palm Beach County.
Mary Lou Ganey, her daughter. I teach fourth grade at Kirkland Elementary, which is in Palm Springs, Florida, though, Palm Beach County, and this year I had the pleasure of working with Jan Rosenberg in my class, and I'm really looking forward to continuing it.
Great.
Okay.
See how interesting our
group is? No, there's some more. I'm sorry. Mary Ann Edwards, Sarasota County, fifth grade teacher, and my son Joel is with me.
Okay. Thank you.
Nancy.
Back over here to my
camera.
Okay, now that you know each other and have something to build on, I think the introduction of self is very important anytime you get in a group. I want you to talk to each other as much as possible because there are a lot of ideas that I think as educators we have, but we don't have a lot of time to interact with each other to share those ideas and develop some good ones. We'll talk more about that tomorrow, but as we go along, please talk to each other specifically about that because we'll all have a chance to implement some of those at some time or another.
The more we share, the more we have to give to other people. I'm going to pass this along to you. It's a map of the area. Just take bunch and pass them on back and pass them this way. This map was done by Barbara Beecham, who is not here. I'd just like to recognize the artist and Barbara.
The town of White Springs is so hard for me to understand. When I looked at this map this morning, I couldn't tell where our office was. But Barbara has grown up here, and she knows every curve in the road. You'll see the maps at Stephen Foster Center. That's where you are right now. She has it done alphabetically. What we're going to do now is to view a video that the Seminole Tribe sent up for us to show you. And Jeanette, you might help me along if I don't get this correct. The title of the video is On the Path to Self-Reliance, and it was produced to show at their museum in Tampa. Have any of you been to the Seminole Museum in Tampa? Okay, you may have seen this documentary. The person speaking is Chairman James Billy, and the types of information that he gives on this video is what the Seminole Tribe wants the general public to know about the tribe. And I think that's a real important thing. I think we're going to talk about this a number of times. So we're going to show that now over here. You can't see this.
You might want to sit on the floor up front or any of that sort of thing. It's fine.
Word that Chairman Billy was supposed to get into the airport by 1 o'clock, and he hasn't come yet. So Jeanette can answer a few informal questions. I didn't put her on the spot because she wasn't really prepared to do this. So maybe if any of you have a few questions about the film, I know just sitting beside her while it was going on, some of the children, I said, he's probably grown by now and things like that. The one in the band, I think we were talking about.
He's grown up and he's in the band with his dad.
Okay. Those are the types of things you find out.
I'd like to know how it would be possible to show the film to some people in Orlando.
Do you
the
know
video?
The
video? Mm-hmm. Yes. You can usually call the office and we'll lend it out. Watching your path.
Okay.
The great panel.
Want a phone number, I can do that too.
Yeah.
Here, I'll put it up here. Is this Hollywood?
Cyprus, but I live in Holloway for job reasons because jobs are kind of scarce in the Cyprus. It's kind of isolated. The nearest town's about 40 miles.
Have any of you ever been in the Everglades? Do you know what the Everglades is like? I know South Floridians probably have, but I know for myself when I went into the Everglades, you get used to the flat land, but there's just a feeling about being in the Everglades, just like looking out over the ocean. You know, it's so far out there to the horizon. It's almost like that when you're out on the land being so flat. I've only been out on the Big Cypress Reservation once.
Yeah, the Big Cypress is the one that's more isolated. Most of the people that live there still speak their language and keep up their traditions because they're not right in town. The ones in Hollywood have lost a lot of their language with McDonald's and everything's right there. And all the kids would rather go out and go skating and do other stuff. Whereas Big Cypress, you don't have too much to do except go to the gym and come grow the same peers and they talk the languages.
Do they sell some of the crafts like your skirt? I've been wanting to purchase.
There's a family that's kind of started their own little business. They take orders and they make like evening gowns and all sorts of like curtains and everything out of there. And then there's also a group of ladies in the Motley. It's like their own little community arts and crafts center. And they take orders and they do a lot of stuff. They come up here every year for the folk festival.
There's one thing I want to say about Jeanette. Comes from a long line of very important women in her tribe. Would you just speak a little bit about your grandmother, Jeanette?
Well, my grandmother's a medicine woman. She's probably about the only one left that knows a lot of the different practices. She was here
2 years ago.
That friendship.
I think it was 2 years ago.
And my mom is trying to learn from her, and I'm trying to learn, but like just like all the other kids, I'm running around doing other things too. And you know,
it's the same as any of us that have to, you know, do home, occupation of the home, and occupation to make a living. I think, I don't know if any of you know about that apprenticeship project, but the funds come from the National Endowment for the Arts, Folk Arts Program to encourage traditions within family groups or community groups, and Jeanette's grandmother and mother worked together on that project for a year. And it turned out to be, I think, a very excellent project because Could you speak a little bit about how your mother was involved before that or wasn't involved?
She was trying to learn. They were like recording some of this stuff. But when we started, we went out and got the herbs. And it was a good experience for me, too. We just went out and collected it and bagged it and wrote out stuff. The only thing was a lot of people would ask questions what the English names of the plants were. I didn't know, and they didn't know either. That was the only the other thing.
Because they were here at the folk festival.
But some people think that just using the herbs is what does it, but it's not. You have to know chants to go along with everything, and there's a diet to go along with all that, and then you exchange material, too. And you have to give either, sometimes you have to give a pig or beads or, you know, it's not really money, it's just material exchange. It's like going to the doctor.
There's the video that you'll see tonight, also you'll see her grandmother, Susie Billy, and her mother, Agnes Sikers. Her mother will be here tomorrow also to demonstrate.
To redirect on the medicine man, I thought that they were mostly men folk, so it's rather unusual that
there's a few women, her uncle's father, and most of the Panther people were medicine people, were in the Panther clan, so all her brothers practiced it, she learned it. And you can't practice it till you're a certain age, like you have to be over your period, but a woman, she can't practice it till like she's through having children and through all that stuff before. So she learned it at a young age, but she didn't start doing it until she was an older woman.
I have a couple other questions on the same line. In the film, it showed the green corn dance, which I thought was remote.
They usually don't, but I think it was just set up for this
stage
film.
For the film.
Staged, yeah.
It's still
just,
not
we just got over one a couple weeks ago, and some of the women are married to non-Indian men, and one of the medicine people asked them not to go into that certain area, and some of them were asked to leave or either stay back, and you couldn't be right there while all the stuff was going on.
Now, I read recently one of the young men that's studying to be a prince as a medicine man got in trouble because he killed one of the rare panthers here in the state of Florida. Tried to arrest him. What's the latest development on that? Do you know?
As far as I know, I think they're going to go up before a jury trial, but it's still kind of...
Isn't that James Bond?
Do you think the courts will pursue that?
No.
I think they're going back off.
I don't know. I hope they back off, but we do use the panther as medicine. But we don't just go around killing it just for the fun of it.
I realize that. Yeah. The white man's justice doesn't want to recognize it.
Just a legal point on this issue. Almost every Indian challenge to the Constitution on the First Amendment, that is the free practice of religion, which includes free speech and the rest of it, has been upheld by the Supreme Court. So if it gets to the Supreme Court, and they sometimes have been turned down and in regional courts, but certainly upheld by the Supreme Court. So that, I would say, who knows where it goes here, but that in every other instance, I cannot think of an instance in which the right of free practice of religion for Native people has not been upheld by the Supreme Court, which is really a remarkable record.
It has come up in a number of different ways in
right.
a number of different tribes around the country also. Has
That's
been.
Well, not only tribes, but even cases in prisons where prisoners were refused the right to wear their hair long or to have sweat baths or any of the other various practices. That those have all been upheld. So the track record is really good. You can begin to understand why Indian people on the whole, looking toward the Constitution, really feel very strongly that they can count on the Constitution to uphold their constitutional rights. Of course, they would contend that they're not constitutional rights, but pre-constitutional rights. But the track record is tremendous on those accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck?
May I clear up a linguistic problem that some of the non-Indian folks here have? And that's the use of the word medicine man. Medicine man is a movie image word, and it was created by James Fenimore Cooper in his first publication, along with the concept of bury the hatchet, go on the warpath. Most of these things that you pick up from the movies, if you'll go back and check your English literature, they were added to the English language largely by James Fenimore Cooper, and they've been around so long that many Indians are beginning to believe that. But in Southeastern tradition, instead of saying medicine man, you should say maker of medicine. And in all the Southeastern traditions, which includes the Choctaw, the Cherokee, although they're an Iroquois language, the Creek-speaking Seminoles and Miccosukee-speaking Seminoles, they have three types. And everybody says medicine man in English, and it's not a sexist term. One is the herbalist, such as Susie, who is a very, very remarkable woman. And as she mentioned, knowing you got to know the herbs, you also have to know the manner in which it's administered. It's a holistic approach, and they give you directions to follow, and you've got to follow, and you have to make your gift or your fair exchange. The other thing, some people confuse a ceremonial leader or the liturgist. And you might as well use the English word. Some people, for instance, Sonny Billy is both a liturgist, that is, he can lead a green corn dance and other things, but he is also a maker of medicine. He is engaged in the curative. So you would do your class a great favor if you would drop that word medicine man and use maker of medicine. One is an herbal for the body and the mind and the spirit. One form of maker of medicine is a liturgist who knows your tribal lore. You call him the carrier or her, the carrier of tradition. And it's not just the medicine man. There are dances like the fox dance that only a woman can lead. And the last kind of maker of medicine is called a knower, a warlock, which means sort of a prophet, someone who can help you discern events in your life, and you have the equivalent in English, but you call it a psychiatrist. The Greek tradition has all three, and all three traditions are alive and well among both the Miccosukee and the Creek speakers in South Florida, the Creek speakers in North Florida. It's only the Choctaw that are growing weak in the use, but I just wanted to add that so that maybe I can persuade you to drop this word. Medicine men, they don't wear horns and dance with rattles and utter strange incantations. They're very beautiful set prayers.
I just, some variants on that too. Other tribes have, and we have, you mentioned knowers or diagnosticians, you want to call them that too. They don't engage in the actual process, the literal process of herbal healing or in spiritual healing, but to know, they diagnose. Among the Navajo, for example, they have hand tremblers who do a particular kind of diagnosis. We also have therapists, you know, people who perform specific forms of physical therapy, if you will. That's what I meant by specialization earlier. So it really is important to think about all these different kinds of things. In my group, it is the women who are primarily herbalists. And my,
it is among all the Creek speakers.
Yeah, that's right. And my particular clan, the Aniwud, which is virtually untranslatable, has been mistranslated for a long time, has to do, literally the translation of the clan name has to do with female power and its clan power, and it's specifically residual in healing. So it's just fairly, most Anglos think it's obscene to talk about the residual nature of that female power, so we won't talk about it. But it's a medicine clan, and to be born into that clan means to have some responsibility to know things like that. So all these things are very specialized, and they're just like the European world. All these specializations are really kind of fun.
I had a question about the government. The people that we saw in this film were primarily of two or three families, or at least the last names. Were that, is that something that is kept within the family, or is that just that you are voted in?
Like the men that we're talking,
yes,
they're
ma'am.
Like tribal council representatives from each reservation. We have elections. We just had one recently, and we elect the chairman, the president, and council representatives. And the guy that was in the pickup truck with the long hair, he was our past councilman for Big Cypress. They were the main ones that were talking. But they're responsible for each community. Like the one from Big Cypress is responsible to come to Hollywood, to sit in on the meetings, go back and have community meetings, inform the people, find out what they want, and then take it back to the main office, since everybody can't, you know, go to a lot of those council meetings.
She was talking why they're all named Billy or Osceola.
We're related by clan systems, not the last names or like. I'm a Panther, so I can't, if I meet a boy and he's a Panther, even though we're not blood related, I can't marry him because he's considered relation to me. And they always go by the female side, so all my kids are Panthers. And then my daughter's kids will be Panthers too. And you don't marry into the same clan. That's how, like, you can marry blood-wise into, like, a cousin as long as it's a different clan. Like, if I know one girl, she married one of her first cousins because it was a different clan. So that's considered no relation. Mm-hmm. Because we go by clans.
So you're saying that Billy and Osceola are all clan names?
No, they're just names. They're just last names. But, I mean, there's like brothers and sisters
are they
and fathers.
Then? They are related.
It's just happens.
It goes by.
Like Smith.
Not all the Smiths are related.
No, they're not. We go by clan systems. It doesn't really matter what your last name is. Like, I'm Cypress, and there could be other people named Cypress, but they have no relation to me at all. I'm a Panther, and if they're an Otter, we have like animal clan names like Otter, and then it could be Wynn and Bird. If they're Bird or something, they're not related to me.
So, like James Billy, who is now the chairman,
he's a Bird clan.
The Frank Billy, who was responsible for the 1957, is he son of that gentleman or no relation?
Their relation with them, they're a different clan, but they are related through the father's side. So you're going to have several, but the main thing is a clan. Like when I used to go to the Miccosukees when they have their green corn dance, first thing a boy would come up to me and they never ask you your name. They say, what clan are you? If they're interested in you, they'll go, what clan are you? You tell them Panther, and if they are, it's like, oh, okay, fine. And they you might like a boy, but if they're real traditional and they find out you're the same clan, you know, and if they're traditional, they won't mess with you. But that's what they always did to me. They'd ask me what clan. And I have to wait and see what they were to find out if it was somebody I could talk to or not.
It's according to the sexes, too. Like she said, the Panthers.
It's just passed on to
you. Do you carry a matriarchal society?
Yeah, they give us enrollment cards.
I met a man, we had in St. Augustine, we had the Spanish ambassador visit, and there was a big book dinner and stuff. And the man I sat across at dinner was from Texas, and he said, he was a Chippewa Indian, but he said he was required by the government.
They started issuing ours because of medical reasons. Like if you go to a hospital and you're trying to get Indian health service, you gotta, you know, have some proof that you are Indian.
He said that every aspect of his life was governed by, and he gave off some statute.
No, ours is if you want to be enrolled. Like if I don't want my child to be enrolled, I don't have to. But if I want him to get certain benefits that the other Seminoles, I have to go through the tribal council and enroll it and do all the paperwork and stuff and have it voted on and accepted and given an enrollment number.
And that's done through the mother?
That's the mother and father can go in and fill in the application. But they have to go through the tribal council meetings.
See, explain something to you. I'm unenrolled because I have no mother. In other words, my mother is not Indian. Mm-hmm. My mother is not Cherokee. So in order for me to be enrolled, I would have to go through, literally somebody would have to adopt me. A person would have to adopt me, and though I could be enrolled because my family's on the 1906 rolls, but it's a complicated process. So I don't feel that I'm not, you know, needing Indian health service and stuff. There it is.
Hey there.
Fresh off the plane.
Well,
let me introduce you. This is Raina Green.
Yeah, can you come up?
Hey there. What am I saying? Here or up there?
Here.
The outline. White folks always have an outline. I'm used to that.
Outline.
Brief history of the tribe. Well, we're all doing all right. We just came in a while ago. We wanted to get here last night, but I guess there's little girls of mine that wanted to go see some movies, so decided to go see the ancient art of filmmaking. So we saw a movie, and then we headed out this morning. I have with me Joe Frank, in the administration, making sure the political will and the administration, accounting, and the accountability of different things, he handles all of that, and I go yin-yanging around with the political structure. And the lady that's with him is Chris O'Donnell, his secretary or right-hand person. And the other person right in my office as my right-hand person is Jeanette Seifert, I think you met. I was flattered to hear that we were going to have something like this going on here today, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. And so when I heard about it, I accepted the invitation, and here I is, and having a good time. Seminole Tribe, as an organization, let's not talk about the organization yet. As it is, when I get into it, I'll probably ask Joel to get into it. But let me see if I can just briefly touch upon who Seminole Indians are. The word Seminole in our culture, I believe, was not even a word yet. Somewhere around the 1400s, around 15, somewhere 1500 or so, somebody came on over here, and we always blame it on a man by the name of Columbus. And then after that, I think different type of other people came in, especially the religious side. The Jesuits, I believe they were, they came over here. And as they started talking to the different people around here, and coming into a foreign country, not knowing their language, not knowing the attitude of the human beings on this continent, somehow did a miraculous job of meeting and making friends and instituting, or not instituting, but creating a new idea with the brown-skinned people. And these people, I guess, must have looked fairly free, uninhibited. I don't know if that would have been a word used back then or something. Maybe confused for a while. But they started calling these people Cimarrones, which means free people. Now, some of you are more educated. You have to go to college or something, get something behind your name to make you sound greater, so you'll have to justify this with those people. I'm just going to tell you as I know it now, so you can use it as a BS, not Bachelor of Science. But anyway, they call them free people. But later on, someone started writing the story down and saying undomesticated, untamed. It didn't really pertain to that when they were talking. They were talking about these free people. What they were free from, I don't know, because I'm pretty sure we had our own share of the problems. There's a different type of diseases here, but I always hear from the non-Indian side who's feeling sorry for the Indian side, saying that there were no diseases, and I'm sure there were diseases here now, something. But there must have been wars that took place, because I hear wife walking that happened in the Caucasian world, and everybody else saying it seems like a new idea. No, it isn't, folks. Wife swapping, wife stealing was going on a long time ago. And probably man stealing too. And a lot of these things that took place, it's probably among the Indian people, if you met a group of people that you didn't know, the first thing you do is go, oh, we better beat the crap out of them or something. And the first thing you know, there was warfare. But the majority of the time, when you hear the story, is that they knew many languages and sign languages, and they tried to get along until something takes place and it creates some sort of hostility. Our language isn't written, and everything that we talk about is just verbatim. I tell it to you, you tell it to somebody else, it becomes a big lie at the end. or it gets a little confused. For that reason, I'm going to try to pinpoint some things as we go, or point out some things. If you take James Billy's personal sayings about something that I'm going to talk about, it does not represent the entire tribe. Some of us live on the East Coast. There's a lot of gophers around there. And in the high country up here in the Highlands County, up in these areas, there's gophers there and we eat that. Some of us live down in the Chokoloxie Islands because of the pursuit years ago, trying to remove the Indians to someplace else, or getting away from warfare or whatever, or just trying to be a hermit or something. They went down into mango country, and they learned to survive off a different type of fish. Oysters. What's the other one? Look at bowhead as I am, but they call it land crabs and blue claw crabs. The people on the West Coast would say, oh, yes, we eat them. They're good. I really like them. Then you ask an Indian on the East Coast, they say, woo, I wouldn't eat that. It looks like boogers coming out of somebody's nose. They do not like Certain group of people do not like abortion, while the other ones did. But I read in the history books where they make it sound like all of us like abortion. No, it doesn't. It applies to every one of you. I'm going to be just very frank. I'm not going to try to put on no fake front teeth. If you don't appreciate it, there's a door. But anyway, I believe everybody, all human beings, whether you're black, brown, yellow, green, purple, you learn to live in the situation that you come upon. So some people learn how to survive out in the mango country of the Thousand Islands. Some people learn the East Coast. Some people learn the Highlands. And some others learned in some nice fancy town of Miami, amongst the Caucasians or the citizens of that time. The different type of histories that we have, some that I believe some of the historians here, the people who work here, something that you run into, especially when they're starting to document or put things on tape. And like I'll ask Janessa, you think we can get this tape down about some legend? They say, no, we shouldn't do that. I say, why? Because we are not supposed to pass it on to anybody else except us. I had a problem with that because Joel Frank and I and a couple other people have gone through a schooling amongst our own Indian people.